knowing that no matter how things might improve from day to day, the old times would never come again. Seeing that all-pervasive melancholia, it was impossible not to feel some empathy. I started navigating my way back to Dominica's tent, then wondered why I was bothering. There were questions I wanted to ask Dominica, but they could equally well be directed to one of her rivals. I might need to talk to them all eventually. The only thing that connected me to Dominica was Quiddenbach, and even if I had begun to tolerate his presence, I'd known all along that I would have to ditch him eventually. I could walk away now, leave the terminus completely, and the chances were that we'd never meet again. I pushed through until I reached the far side of the bazaar. Where the furthest wall should have been was only an opening through which the lower levels of the city could be seen, behind a perpetual screen of dirty rain sluicing from the side of the terminus. A haphazard line of rickshaws waited, upright boxes balanced between two wide wheels. Some of the rickshaws were powered, coupled behind steam engines or chugging methane-powered motors. Their drivers lounged indolently awaiting fares. Others were propelled by pedal power, and several looked to have been converted from old palanquins. Behind the row of rickshaws there were other, sleeker vehicles, a pair of flying machines much like the Volantors I knew from Sky's Edge, crouched down on skids, and a trio of craft which looked like helicopters with their rotors folded for stowage. A squad of workers eased a palanquin into one of them, tipping it at an undignified angle to get it through the entrance door. I wondered if I was witnessing a kidnapping or a taxi pickup. Although I might have been able to afford one of the Volantors, the rickshaws looked the most immediately promising. At the very least, I could get a flavor of this part of the city, even if I had no specific destination in mind. I started walking, cutting through the crowds, my gaze fixed resolutely ahead. Then, when not quite halfway there, I stopped, turned around and returned to Dominica's. "Is Mr. Quiddenbach finished yet?" I asked Tom. Tom had been shimmying to the sitar music, apparently surprised to find someone entering Dominica's tent without being coerced.
"Mister, he no ready. 10 minutes. You got money?"
I had no idea how much Quiddenbach's excisions were going to cost him, but I figured the money he had recovered on the Grand Teton experientials might just cover it. I separated the bills from my own, laying them down on the table.
"No enough, mister. Madame Dominica, she want one more."
Grudgingly, I unpeeled one of my own lower denomination bills and added it to Quiddenbach's pile. "That had better be good," I said. "Mr. Quiddenbach's a friend of mine, so if I find out you're going to ask him for more money when he comes out, I'll be back."
"Is good, mister. Is good."
I watched as the kid scurried through the partition into the room beyond, briefly glimpsing the hovering form of Dominica and the long couch on which she did her business. Quiddenbach was prone on it, stripped to the waist, with his head enfolded in a loom of delicate-looking probes. His hair had been shaved completely. Dominica was making odd gestures with her fingers, like a puppeteer working invisibly fine strings. In sympathy, the little probes were dancing around Quiddenbach's cranium. There was no blood, nor even any obvious puncture marks on his skin. Maybe Dominica was better than she looked. "Okay," I said when Tom re-emerged. "I have a favor to ask of you, and it's worth one of these." I showed him the smallest denomination I had. "And don't say I'm insulting you, because you don't know what it is I'm about to ask."
"Say it, big guy."